This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So, you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Good morning, everybody, and happy Tuesday. That was a relief. That was certainly a relief last night. We'll get to that. Let's see. Today on the radio show, we got John Martin in the next segment. John Martin will join us. Talk to him about the Tigers and other matters. Then we got Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. What else do we got, Jeffrey?
Jeff, we also have Sam Hardiman.
Sam Hardiman. Did I say it's Tuesday?
No, you did not. You said it's...
You sure?
Pretty sure you didn't say it's Tuesday.
Okay, good. And we got Sam Hardiman. Yeah.
Correct.
So we got a busy day. We got John Martin, we got Chris Harrington, and we got Sam Hardiman. I think I said Tuesday. It's Wednesday. It is absolutely Wednesday. I was thrown off by the victory. It's been so long. I've lost track of days.
It was a late-ish night.
And it was a late-ish night. But anyway, that's the lineup for today. John Martin, Chris Harrington, and then Sam Hardiman. The Grizzlies won, and we can certainly celebrate that. I'll ask you this, Jeffrey. When they're down in the first quarter by 14.
Yep.
Second quarter by 14, I think it was.
I think it was the second quarter was by 14.
When they were down by 14 in the second quarter, what was your level of concern?
I would say it was... I didn't think, like, oh, they're for certain going to lose. What I did think was, man, 10.5 points was just free money. That was the first thing going through my mind, and I didn't take it.
Well, it's a good thing.
Because
it's a good
in
thing.
My,
now, in the end.
I said this to you yesterday. My instinct was the line was alarmingly big, which would make me think, like.
They knew something?
Correct.
Is that what it makes you?
Yes.
But then why is it alarmingly? It would have been reassuringly big.
Well,
should
it was
have been reassuringly big.
I'm just glad that I didn't jump on
didn't
it.
Didn't jump on
because
it.
I was like, ooh, that looks tasty.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, anyone who listens knows that I am anticipating disaster at every turn, any team I care about. So, of course, I was alarmed when they were down by 14. I did take comfort in the fact that Utah was just hitting everything, and they weren't wide open shots they were hitting. Utah was hitting contested threes, like all of them. And I'm like, this cannot continue.
I thought that in the second quarter. In the first quarter, I was like, look, game starts wide open three.
Yeah,
wide open
three. That is true.
Wide open three. But you're right. Then in the second quarter, the Grizzlies were starting to at least contest the shots. It's like, okay, well, they're not going to make those forever.
And then, of course, the Grizzlies go on a 17-4 run to end the half to draw within one.
Briefly took the lead.
And then they win by 37.
Yep.
Well, that was wonderfully reassuring. And I can't tell you how much better I feel today. It's funny how it works. It is funny how it works. A win, a blowout win, a win like that. You know, just for fun, the Grizzlies hit a million threes. Okay, it was actually just 20. It was 20 of 45 from three. But just to celebrate, and just so we recall what it feels like, what it sounds like, we will play you a succession of Grizzlies highlights, and the alert of you out there might notice that they are all threes. Here you go. Ended up, 9 different Grizzlies had multiple threes. 9 different Grizzlies had multiple threes. Jaren had 2. Santi had 2. Jay Wells had 2. Bane had 2. Pippen had 2. Huff only had 1. That's interesting. Among the players who did not have multiple threes were Jay Huff and Cam Spencer. Cam Spencer did play.
Yep.
Obviously, there's garbage time there at the end. Played 7 minutes. Did not hit a single three. But Zach Edey had 2. John Conchar had 2. Luke Kennard had 2. And Vince Williams had 3. That's 9 players with multiple threes. That is the most in NBA history to have multiple threes in a game. Grizzlies 20 of 45 from 3. They win 140-103. The numbers in the end, as will happen when you have that kind of a second half, the numbers in the end were pretty overwhelming. It was 76-38 in the second half.
They scored 17 points in the third quarter.
They doubled them up. It was unbelievable. And so you had a lot of fun stats there. Rebounds, 52-28. How about that? Second chance points by Utah, 0. Offensive rebounds, 17-4. Bench points, 65 bench points from the Grizzlies. You go right down the line here. There are a lot of stats that can make you feel better about things. Interesting, they kept the starting lineup the way that it was with Santi. They didn't go big. They didn't go back. But both bigs, if you're looking at individual things that might make you feel better about things going forward, both Jay Huff and Zach Edey had very productive games. 15-5 for Huff, 15-7 for Edey. Huff, again, he was only 1 of 6 from 3. He had about a zillion dunks, though.
Yep.
those are
had
high.
The Statue of Liberty dunk as well.
Those are high percentage. You had a double-double from Scottie Pippen Jr., who was terrific once again, 16-10-5 with 0 turnovers. I think the thing that made me, here's another stat. This one from Sean Coleman, who does such a good job over on Twitter, capturing stats. It is the 140th. I mean, they scored 140 points for the 13th time in franchise history. 6 of those times were before this year. 7 of those times are this year.
Yep.
Which is something about the Grizzlies offense, but it's something about the nature of the NBA. It is both of those things. I think, of all the things, the final score is what made me feel happiest. Let's be honest. They got the W. Of all the things that made me feel better.
What's happening to the rest of the league?
No, I'm going to get to that. That was certainly good,
okay,
too. But in terms of the Grizzlies themselves, it was Vince Williams Jr.'s night, I think. Hit some threes. You know, he was himself. He was, he had 15 points. He was 5 of 7. He was 3 of 5. He had 4 rebounds. He had an assist. And he was plus 31. Like, that is among the things that I sort of was counting on that have gone wrong.
Yep.
It was Vince Williams from the very beginning. We would talk about, Vince Williams should be starting over Marcus Smart, right? That was maybe I'll have to start Marcus Smart.
That was the summer conversation.
Out of deference to his seniority and status and the stature in the league. But let's be honest, we know that Vince Williams is the best fit with this group, et cetera. Now Jalen Wells is the fit with this group, but I did expect that when Vince Williams came back, there was some mystery to it, but I expected him to be more effective than he has been. And obviously injuries have part of it, but his line last night was, I thought, encouraging as well. So the Grizzlies get the win. Now they got Oklahoma City coming up next.
Hooray.
That will be no picnic. But as you point out, the other thing that can make you feel better is what you and Chris, who have less apt to see disaster looming at every corner, what you have pointed out, and that is that other teams will lose. And sure enough, the Heat, on the Jimmy Butler return night, beat the Warriors. Now, no Steph, but that's 112-86. The Heat beat the Warriors. The Rockets did knock off the Hawks, so that was not great. But the big loss last night, in terms of the looking immediately around the Grizzlies, was the Heat knocking off the Warriors. And so the standings are now as follows. The Grizzlies back and forth, Jeffrey.
Indeed.
They are back and forth. They are half game ahead of the Lakers. They are only a half game behind Denver. Now, it feels like, who knows, 10 games left. Obviously, Oklahoma City is running away with it. Then you've got Houston, which has a, you know, 2.5 game cushion over the Grizzlies, a 2 game cushion over Denver, and they won again. So,
and their 2.5 game cushion is really 3.
Yeah. So let's just concede 2.
Yeah.
Let's concede 2. But Denver, you're half a game behind Denver. You're a half a game ahead of LA. That's 3, 4, and 5. Then there's a little bit of a drop-off. 3 games. You're 3 games now ahead of Golden State, which is comforting.
Yeah.
Steph is coming back, Steve Kerr said Friday. They've lost 2 in a row without Steph. With Steph, they had been blazingly hot. And then if the goal is still just to stay in out of the play-in, you are now 3.5 ahead of the Clippers, who have the Knicks tonight. And so that is a big one. That could be 4. And that would give you, it seems to me, some reassurance. The next 4, Oklahoma City, the Lakers, the Celtics, and the Warriors. Jeffrey, I am offering you 1 guaranteed victory. In those 4, I'm offering you, I will lock in that disaster will not happen, and you will not be swept in those 4 games. I'm offering you 1-3, because the point here is to avoid disaster, to avoid the play-in. You've said you just need to beat the bad teams. There are no bad teams in here.
There was a second part of that.
I'm guaranteeing you 1 win. Will you take it?
No. I want 2. I think they can split.
Of course you want to.
No, but I'm saying also, of those 4 games, 3 are at home.
Yes.
And 2 of those teams you have beaten by 1,000 points at home already earlier this year.
You don't have Ja, at least so far as we know, at this moment.
But we could.
You don't have Ja, and we know you don't have Brandon.
Correct. And I assume Jaren is going to be, I assumed that was just, he like,
didn't have to come back.
He needed stitches or something. I mean, he got popped in the mouth.
He did get popped. We'll assume he's back.
It did not seem to me like they were worried about concussion protocol. It seemed like they were just worried about, okay.
If you're really concerned with averting disaster, you would take 1-3. But you are holding out for 2-2.
I just don't think disaster is as likely as you do. If you look over,
I'm just
basketball reference.
I'm not even saying likely. I'm just saying I always am worried.
No, I'm saying
this.
I don't think it is as likely as you do, which means
I don't even think it's likely.
Correct.
But if it's 10% chance of it, I want to avert that 10% chance. It's not
a matter of likelihood. It's a 3.9% chance, according to basketball reference.
Did they lose all 4 of those games?
Well, that they would go.
Oh no, no,
they
no.
Would miss, that they
I
would,
don't think at this point I would not bet on them, given the way things have gone.
Yeah,
but I think there's a very reasonable chance that they go 1-3 in those games.
Oh, I'm conceding. Entirely possible they go 0-4.
I'm conceding. That's exactly right. I'm conceding they're going to lose to Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
So that means Lakers, Celts. Now the Celts don't have Tatum at this point. But you know, you did beat the Celts. I don't think you're likely to beat the Celts, and so that means I'm offering you a split with the Lakers and the Warriors. But you're not taking it, and I think that's admirable. I don't think most. I don't think most Grizzlies fans would take it. Are you aiming now? Are you most concerned with, like, we can be back worrying about the fact that I was worrying about the play-in shows how bad they look.
Well, no, how bad they've
looked. How bad they've looked.
No, let's
right?
be clear.
Right.
Post All-Star break, this team sucked.
Right. But we should be worrying about.
I mean, we're having to take solace in the fact that they beat the Jazz last night.
That what we should be worrying about is home court advantage in the first round. Can we be back to worrying about that? Which is right now, if season ended today, they would have it.
Yes, I think you can be. I think you can even get back to, hey, let's get to the three and avoid Oklahoma City in the second round if you win.
I'm much less concerned about that now because I don't like their chances in the first round. I'm not really that optimistic, so I'm not so much thinking ahead to the second round. If they could simply win a first round series, it would be a massive triumph, it seems to me. But I think we can be back to worrying about whether they will finish at least fourth and ahead of the Lakers and Golden State.
I think also who finishes sixth plays into how I'm feeling.
Yeah, but we will.
I welcome Golden State.
It's impossible to predict, though. The problem is you can't, and we've talked about this before, you can't jockey there because you just got no idea who's going to finish
sixth. But it's also why I think just go get as high as you can.
Anyway, Grizz win. We'll talk more about that with Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. We've got John Martin next. We got Sam Hardiman as well. Because we have such a busy show, there's some other stuff, Jeffrey, that we do have to get to, including the mystifying news yesterday. I was at Kroger when I saw the news that Russell Wilson, that the part of your joy when the Giants signed Jameis was, this is going to be fun. Like, whatever you think of Jameis, it's a fun experience. It's a roller coaster ride.
Even if you're getting beat, it's fun.
Yeah, and so at least there's going to be moments. But part of it was just like you were signed on to that. And then part of it was, man, I love that we don't have to put up with the Russell Wilson experience. And there, what do you know?
Nope.
They go get them both. What do you think's happening there? They very clearly think Russell Wilson's going to be the starter. Jameis Winston's going to be the backup.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at it, the contract for Wilson was clearly announced by his agent. It's
announced as a,
it was like,
announced as a three-year deal, right?
It is a one-year $10 million deal. And I think Jameis technically has a one-year $8 million deal or $7 million deal.
But it's pretty clear Russell Wilson is the starter.
I mean, he is. This is how it always goes. But, like, I don't think he's good. Like, I think that's a bigger problem he has.
You do think this signals to you that they do not believe they're going to be drafting a quarterback at number three, right?
So the only thing you could talk me into is they're shoring it up so that they don't have to play quarterback day one. And so this gives them a bridge. And then if you're trying to maybe save your job, hey, week 10, it's off to a bad start. You play the young guy.
You don't think if Shador is there at three, they take him?
No, what I think it actually signals is they don't think they're getting him.
Well, that would be it.
I think it signals that they
think that they know that he is, that Shador is even going to go two then?
It seems to me like they're signaling
to everybody that Shador is going to go two.
Quarterbacks are going to go one and two.
It's funny, by the way. I was, when I was at AutoZone Park the other night, I was talking to a gentleman. this was interesting. And he said, does ESPN make you talk about the NFL? That's the only thing I can figure. He said that ESPN makes you talk about the NFL so much. I've always wondered. And just for any of you who have any misconceptions about how this works, we have no contact with ESPN. ESPN is not involved, does not care, does not. It's a branding issue, right? Is it, Jeffrey? What's our relationship with ESPN?
Our relationship with them is that we are their affiliate that runs their national.
And so
program.
We run their national stuff.
Correct.
That's it. This show is the show that Jeffrey and I cook up every day.
Correct.
Period. ESPN has absolutely no influence. Now, but he was mystified why we talk about the NFL. Now, he was a man of about my vintage, and he wanted us to be talking about more baseball and more whatever else. And I simply said to him, do you listen to what ESPN does? Why do you think ESPN talks exclusively?
You don't have it on, but earlier, they're now talking about last night with Jimmy Butler, but they started the show, and it really got my blood pressure up,
with just a nice montage of all of Russ's bad throws from last year. I think people like just saw his numbers. Like, he remember he hit like George Pickens for like 300 yards, and everyone's like, "Oh, Russ, unlocking him, unlocking." It's like Russ still sucks.
People talk about the NFL nationally, locally, whatever, because the NFL is a colossus, because its ratings are massive, because everyone cares about the NFL. He then asked me, he said, if you open up the phones and took calls on people calling and saying, what's your team, right?
Sure.
How many of those people would call in and say their favorite team is an NFL team? And I suspect in Memphis, most people's favorite team, the team they care about most, is in fact a college football team or a college basketball team. Don't you think that's true?
I think,
which is why we talk about college football and college basketball.
So I'm always a little, I think our audience, that's the answer. But I think if you say Memphis at large, I think it would perhaps be Tigers, Grizzlies, or NFL team. Like if you go to, you know, on a Sunday.
But there's a bunch of people who live here who will say their favorite team they care most about is the Vols.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
And there's a bunch of people who say the team they care most about is the Rebels.
Sure.
But then you're right. There's a bunch of people who say the team they care most about is the Cowboys.
Yeah.
Or Steelers. Is the Steelers, right?
Titans.
Is the Steelers, or is the Titans.
Yeah.
Or whatever. But here's the truth. It's not even just what team you care most about. It's what's next after that. Maybe you care most about the Vols, but what you watch the most of and what you bet on the most and what your fantasy team is in and what your, that's all NFL. Like that's your favorite team could be, you know, whatever. It could be Arkansas State, but you watch the NFL. NFL ratings are killer everywhere, including in Memphis.
Absolutely. I would also argue there's a generational issue.
Well, I think 100%.
Because
this was a guy, I said this to him. I said, you and I are of a certain vintage. He grew up at a time when baseball was.
Oh, I'm even talking specifically about football. So I've noticed the generation that predates me, and so I guess I'm the early part of millennials. There was still this tribalism of either you watched football on Saturdays or you watched football on Sundays. And it was like, I don't like the NFL. I don't like college. And there was that.
Yeah, that's gone.
Now my generation's like, wait, you can give me another day of football?
Right.
I'm going to do that.
I think that's gone. I think that's it. There were people who were like, I hate NFL.
Correct.
I just like college football.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think that has largely gone away as well. But to be clear, I also talk about NFL because I care deeply about the NFL. You know, I care about the Memphis teams, and then I care about the NFL. That's fundamentally it.
It's also the easiest league to follow.
It's the best league.
I mean, as much as I hate Goodell, like, they have it, they have their, so many sports have their calendar and schedule screwed up. The NFL doesn't.
Well, we
the biggest
college basketball, we got the portal going on.
I mean, unreal.
At the same time that we got the NCAA tournament going on. In baseball right now, you have this issue that the Dodgers are outspending everybody, and how can you compete if you're in Pittsburgh or Kansas City or whatever? That doesn't exist in
the
NFL.
This issue?
No one says, how can Green Bay or Buffalo compete?
Why did Major League Baseball not start yesterday? Like, even if you want to say, let's punt and we'll concede the win, the last day of the win. Yeah,
the
but like,
thing was massive.
But that was only two teams.
Right. Yeah.
There's 28 other teams. Why were we not playing? I mean, they should have been playing baseball on Monday.
So we do talk NFL unapologetically and purely out of our choice. It is 100% because we like it and because we're interested in it. Jeffrey is frustrated that Russell Wilson.
Oh, no, I'm done.
You're done. You've moved on.
I'm done.
You moved on. You've set him aside.
I'll check back at the end of the season.
I think your point that it either means they're just not interested in Shador, or it means that they really think he won't be available, which is an interesting signal to think that maybe the Browns are going to be taking Shador. The other thing that was interesting to me was
also, if I could keep the Pats from getting Travis Hunter, God, that'd be.
Well, that's the problem is the two quarterbacks going first means the Pats will get who they want, which I'm not really interested in.
No, they can't always get who they want because we're at three.
Oh, I see. So you can take it.
Mm-hmm. Now we'll get Abdul Carter and he'll go on to be.
I was listening to someone on ESPN speculate about whether the Titans are just trying to drive up the market for Cam Ward or whether they're locked in on Cam Ward. And when I heard that, I'm like, no, they're locked in. Let's read Joe Rexroad over at The Athletic. Everyone says they're locked in. But then yesterday there was a story over at ESPN that said, after having watched his pro day, it's going to take an even bigger package to get to get the number one pick away from the Titans. They liked him so much, it's going to take an even bigger package. That was the story.
You think the lady doth protest too much?
So that does make me think maybe they are, in fact, all these stories about they're locked in on whatever else maybe are to drive up. I'm now freshly confused. I had conceded that Cam Ward was going to go to the Titans, but now after seeing that story, that was so transparently ridiculous. We love him so much. Yeah, we're still listening, but now it's going to take an even bigger package.
Okay, so set aside the smokescreen season, because remember, football people trying to lie to each other is always a hilarious operation.
Right.
What's their quarterback option?
Yeah, that's true. They did nothing else.
Correct. I mean, I suppose you could make the argument they could, at the 11th hour, try to get Cousins. But if you're Cousins, are you pushing for that?
Yeah. So I think that's right. I think that's probably right. The other news was Stephon Diggs goes to the Pats. I was surprised. Obviously, they don't have anyone. Like, they got nobody. They got nobody for their star quarterback to throw to. Drake May has nobody. And so they got Mac Hollins. Mac Hollins led the Bills in touchdown grabs last year, so I guess maybe I should be more respectful of the former Bill. They add Stephon Diggs. I was surprised that he got 3 years, $69 million, which is not real, but $26 million guaranteed for a guy who I think most people would say, well, it turns out in the Josh Stephon Diggs, who was right, who was wrong? Josh was right.
Yes.
Stephon Diggs was wrong, and then, was he already washed? And then he gets an injury, and so still $26 million guaranteed. I think that's a nice piece of business for Stephon Diggs.
The only thing I was thinking is the Pats might have to get to the floor, the salary cap floor. Like, it's $26 million, but do we know how much is owed to him immediately?
Don't know the answer to that.
So, like, I don't know. My biggest thing is I do not want Stephon Diggs to be introduced to my young quarterback.
Now, he did help Josh become the quarterback he was.
But he was better then. He was arguably the best receiver.
Yes, he got open.
Yes.
And it's nothing like an open dude.
Not he got open. He got wide, open.
Yeah. Anyway, so that was interesting. Other news in the world of college sports, Richard Pitino to Xavier. That's official now, right?
Yes.
Phil Martelli Jr. is seemingly
so that,
VCU.
I got to give done? Hat tip to VCU. That might have been the best run search of all time because
we didn't hear anything.
No one mentioned his name.
There's talk about Mick Cronin to Villanova. Did you see that?
Well, I think the big question is, so was Richard Pitino a signal that Willard is going to Villanova or that Villanova already has their guy? My deal is, if it's going to be Mick Cronin, UCLA's out. What are you waiting on?
Oh, I see. If it's going to be Mick Cronin, it can be Mick. He's available.
Correct.
Go ahead and grab him. Russ Hodge, the North Texas coach, is in the running. Ren Baker obviously has a relationship there to West
I actually think
Virginia.
That makes some sense.
It is interesting, though, isn't it? Like, if you're a good coach, this is just goes to show what we were talking about. The challenges of being Memphis these days. North Texas was a credible program this year.
Absolutely.
And so what happens? Their coach gets snatched up. And so you're looking for other credible programs. Florida Atlantic was once upon a time a credible program. What happens? Their coach gets snapped up. It's one of the challenges that I've been talking about all week of being Memphis. It's also one of the reasons that you should be glad that Penny is the coach at Memphis, because if he has success, he doesn't immediately bounce.
Well,
like everybody else in the AAC, they have success. They're the hell out of here.
With the caveat of who knows what tomorrow holds, the reports from yesterday were that the whole staff's coming back. And right. When's the last time we're truly going to have, like, staff continuity?
And then the other thing I want to talk about was interesting in the world of college football was Troy Taylor gets canned yesterday. He's the yeah. Stanford coach. And listen, he's been there 2 years and they've been awful. And then in addition, he supposedly mistreats people.
His staff, not his players, is what it does sound like.
Yeah, no, his staff, not his players. And compliance. There was one report that said, someone who had dealt with lots of athletic departments had never seen a coach as openly disdainful and hostile towards the compliance people as Troy Taylor had been. Sounds like just a charming guy. But what was interesting, so he was fired yesterday. I think this is a first. He was fired by the GM.
Yep.
Andrew Luck is the new GM at Stanford. He was not fired by the athletic director. He was fired by, see this in the NFL all the time, he was fired by the general manager. What do you make of that?
So number one, was it an Andrew Luck shield? Because Andrew also, late last week, basically said, like, listen, these are all problems. We're not.
Oh, no. At that point, he said, we're riding with him last
right.
week.
And so all of a sudden it changes, and it's like, is Andrew being forced to be the heat guy? The guy that goes out and, you know, he didn't even really go out. He
released a statement.
He released a statement. I think the other thing, though, that kind of like stood out to me, it's like Troy Taylor was one of those coaches that was in like FCS and like unbelievable coach and never got moved up. And it made me wonder, it's like, peeked under the hood.
Interesting. All right, we got to take a break. John Martin coming up next, then Chris Harrington, then Sam Hardiman. We got a busy day. It's springtime out there. My God, it feels great, too. Went for a run yesterday. It's sunny. It's warm. There's no mosquitoes yet. It's perfect. It's also the perfect time to get into Oak Hall. I will argue that there is no better season in Memphis than springtime, and I will argue that there is no better place to celebrate and get ready for spring than Oak Hall. You walk in there, you feel a spring just in your step, you'll feel the spring. I'm wearing a shirt from Oak Hall right now. I'm meeting someone for lunch today, and I got a short sleeve button down on from Peter Millar from Oak Hall. Look good, feel good, swimwear, everything. Whether you're headed on vacation or headed to the golf course or headed to a spring wedding or headed to your own backyard, no better place to go get ready than to see our friends at Oak Hall. It's a world-class store. We're lucky to have it. No better place to celebrate spring. We're going to take a break. Talk to John Martin on the other side. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by John Martin, Jason and John, every single day from 11 till 2. So John was in Las Vegas last week, then he missed Monday. He was in yesterday. I was not able to listen to the show. And so, John, I have a series of questions because I want you to weigh in on some Memphis Tigers stuff for me because I don't know where you stand on this stuff. One, did the Memphis Tigers lose to Colorado State because Penny was outcoached?
In the second half, I would say yes, for sure. I mean, they just made adjustments. And look, part of that is maybe, you know, Penny didn't have a counter, Memphis didn't have a counter, but I thought that, you know, the adjustments were the difference. And that's, you know, Nico Medved's adjustments were better than Penny's, you know, and that's sort of the definition of, you know, somebody outcoached somebody. And, you know, it was just a slow bleed in the second half. You know, you could kind of see it going the wrong way. What do they start on, like an 8-0, 10-0 run or something like that? I mean, there was never a counter adjustment to the initial one.
I think the argument would have been, and you just mentioned it, is that like you and Jason were the folks, and I don't know if you finally settled on this, but I know when I asked you early last week, I said, listen, if neither of these two point guards are going to play, if Hunter and Harris aren't going to play, is Memphis going to lose? And you said, yes. I don't know if that's where you ended up at the end of the week, but that was at one point your view. Neither played. So who are you, like, if Nick Jordan is being terrible and Dane Danger was very clearly gassed, PJ Hagerty was just like, I'm not enough of a savant to know. What is the adjustment that you're going to make when you got, like, who are you going to? Like, what, Barack Okoji was not good, as you've, again, you certainly called that one. Like, I sort of think he was out of bullets, you know? They've been thin all year long.
Yeah, that's possible. That is if not probable. But, you know, I there were so many different games on. I was having to pay attention to so many different ones. Like, I don't know if there was like were they playing zone? Could they have done? I mean, because it felt like the one dude for Colorado State, Evans, like, just could not miss. So,
right. And they were getting open threes. Yeah, and they were getting open threes. I mean, that's true.
So, I mean, I think that was one where you look back and, like, you know, we should have run some different defenses at them.
Next question.
But
next question.
I don't think there were a ton that you could have made. No.
All right. Was it a good year for Memphis basketball?
Yeah, I'd say it was a good year for sure. Was it great? No. But, I mean, I just always go back to the way that we were feeling, you know, leading up to this thing. You know, I go back to the way that we were feeling after the exhibition games. You know, you lose two of those games, you get handled by a North Carolina team that went on to be extremely mediocre, barely made the tournament. I would say, you know, you win the AAC, you win the tournament, you know, you have an All-American guard. You beat Ole Miss, you beat Michigan State, you beat UConn. I mean, of course it was a good year. And certainly better than we would have expected, you know, leading up to it. So, was it a great year? Was it a year that we'll remember forever? Probably not, but it was certainly a good year relative to, you know, what we thought it would be.
Okay. If getting to the tournament and losing in the first round, but in the way that they did, winning all the games and all the titles that they did along the way, if that is enough for us to conclude that it was a good year this year, would that be a good year next year? Or do we have to at some point ask for more in terms of tournament success?
Yeah, I mean, that you have to. I mean, one tournament win in 7 years is definitely not enough. Now, of course, one of those years was a COVID year, but they were not going to the tournament. Like, people, I think people, you know, revise history a little bit. They were way off the tournament bubble.
It's 1-7. It's 1-7, man. Yeah, it's 1-7. Yeah.
So it's one tournament win in 7 years, and that's certainly not enough. I mean, that's less than Josh. I think Penny knows that, you know. It's one of those things where it's disappointing that, you know, you're a five seed and you have a path and you can't take advantage of it. But I think Colorado State also, you know, it's just what happens in Memphis. Like, you get matched up against FAU was one of the hottest non-power five teams in the country in the 8-9 game. They end up going to a Final Four. Colorado State was one of the 10 best teams in America since February. You get matched up with them and they're a buzzer beater away from going to the Sweet 16. So it just feels like Memphis always gets these overperforming, you know, non-power teams, as opposed to getting the crack at the underachieving SEC team or Big 12 team. It just never happens that way. But just for the stability of the program, for sure, you've got to win a game in this thing. You've got to make a run at some point.
Will PJ Hagerty be back?
I don't know on that. I don't know. Like, I haven't heard anything, definitive on that. I do think it's somewhat notable that he's not already in the portal. A lot of guys are in the portal. He is not yet. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean anything, because he could have a do not contact when he enters the portal, whenever that may be, which will in most cases mean he knows where he's headed. Now, sometimes a guy can enter the portal and say, do not contact. And what that basically means is just contact my agent. Like, just don't go through me. But I don't know. I think there's a lot of reasons to be hopeful. Memphis has never lost a player in the portal, a player that it wanted to the portal in the NIL era. It's never happened. PJ Hagerty would be the first. Every other player, it was just kind of like.
Who was great for them? DeAndre, I guess, right? Like, who have
DeAndre
they had?
Didn't,
I mean, they got Kendrick for 1 year, like, and then see, so he didn't have a chance
Lester
to go to the
Quinones
portal.
Lester Quinones never entered the portal.
He was kind of pre-portal, wasn't he? Like pre-NIL portal.
It was 2022.
He went pro, and then the same thing for David Jones. Both guys went pro when it was unexpected that they went pro.
So, yeah, like Memphis doesn't lose players to the portal like that they want. This would be the first time. PJ would be the first one. So have they had a lot that they would want in the portal?
Yeah,
no,
right.
But
yeah.
But it still has not happened yet. So he would be the first. I think Penny's track record is good here with these kinds of guys. I do think they'll be able to come up with a competitive package for him. It's just a matter of, you know, does he want to run it back in this league, you know, instead of playing in a power, you know, he's going to have to figure that out. I mean, he is a guy who's played at Tulsa and at Memphis. He's probably sick of the AAC at this point, or he's just conditioned to it. I guess we're going to find out.
It certainly didn't. Being in the AAC did not prevent him from getting all kinds of accolades. You know, it did not get in the way of his profile, you know, ascending this year. And I think that argues in favor. You can come back. You can do this again. On the other hand, as you point out, he's done it here. Like, is there something to be said for proving yourself at a different level, the challenges that you have every single week? In the AAC. Do you think he can add a 3-point shot, John? I mean, is that a realistic thing to think that if he comes back that next summer, like PJ Haggerty with a 3-point shot would be a hell of an even more effective weapon?
Well, he already kind of showed this year. I mean, I don't know what he finished with. I don't know what his numbers were at the end. But you know, it was better, certainly better than it was better. You know, a year prior. I don't know. I think so. Yeah, he went from 29% to 36.4%.
What was the volume? I mean, how many did he make or take a game? It did not feel.
He took three a game. I mean, that's pretty good. It's not elite, but it's pretty good. I mean, it's much better than what he was. So yeah, I mean, I think that's a very encouraging split there. You know, a lot of them were kind of, you know, chaotic and just sort of heaved up, but. He's only a sophomore, you know. He finished third in the country in scoring at 21.7 a game. So I think there's a lot to be excited about with him.
What's your level of
optimism? That's why he's going to get a lot of money in the portal.
Right. And what would you want the shopping list to be around him? Well, everything.
Well,
honestly, it's everything,
I mean,
right?
You know, I think Quincy Ballard from Wichita State is a good start for a big man. You know, you obviously have familiarity with him in the league already. So I would definitely look into him. I would look into Amar Knox, the transfer from Alabama State, who's I think signed here at one point. He averaged 14 points a game. He hit the game winner against St. Francis. He sent them to Division III with that shot. So I would look at those two guys. You know, let's see if Corey Washington from Wichita State enters the portal. I like his game. They need some wings. The kid from Quinnipiac, right?
Quinnipiac, yep.
I gotta find his name, but he's coming in for a visit according to Hitman Hoops. I like his game a lot. And I can't remember what his name is, but Amari Monroe. He averaged 18-9 last year, and he's put together. He's built like he was the MAAC Player of the Year. Like, just drop the M, come to the AAC, and we'll run it back. So yeah, those would be the kinds of guys I go after. I mean, I think if you're a guy like him, Memphis would be a great spot.
So I recall I was driving along, avid listener of the Jason and John Show. I was driving along one day, and you were talking about your bracket, and you said, you know what? I'm embarrassed to post my bracket because I got, not only do I have all four number ones advancing, I got chalk throughout the bracket. I just don't see this as a year when there's going to be any kind of mayhem. Well, John, you certainly saw that correctly. Your thoughts?
Yeah. You know, listen, I enjoy it. I enjoy the best teams advancing. I enjoy the best coaches advancing. I enjoy the best players advancing. I realize that, like, there are lots of people out there that want to see the chaos, the mayhem, as you put it. But, you know, I reserve those for, like, you know, the first round. And then it's like, get the hell out of the tournament. You know, you want to upset a two, that's fine. But let's not make this an extended stay. But even though I ended up being right, it's still like, you know, I'm supposed to be right. The chalk is supposed to advance. It's supposed to be here. You know, it's a credit to the tournament that, like, it hasn't always been the case. But this is, you know, all the signs were there before this thing started, just about how strong it was at the top, especially the one seeds, you know. And Florida got pushed. I mean, Florida got pushed against UConn. That was a little scary. But I don't really think anybody else did. I guess if you want to say Houston played a close one against Gonzaga, but it didn't ever feel like that one was really in doubt. They jumped on them to start that game. So, you know, Auburn, I guess, was tied with Creighton at the half or down at the half even. But, you know, the one seeds just prove at the end of the game that they are a class above. And, you know, I think that will be the case still in the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight.
It's funny, though. It's very clearly, like, TV viewers like it. Ratings are up. It should be a great second weekend of basketball. The only way that I object, and I don't need the sweet story to make my heart swell. That's not it. But I look at it through the prism of Memphis. You know, I look at it through the prism of Memphis. And if this is indicative that it's harder to have success outside the power structure, I think that's a bad thing for Memphis. And we've seen this, and you've talked about it in the league, is when the league is that weak, when you literally start knowing that 87% of your schools are going to go to the NCAA tournament in the SEC, and in Memphis you got to be perfect. That's the perspective from which I don't like it. It's not because I need the violins in the second weekend.
Yeah, I mean it is. I mean, you know, but that's America. It's just
that is tournament that is America.
The tournament is just becoming a mere reflection of the nation at large. I was actually thinking about that in the airport. It's like, yeah, of course, the people with the most money and the most access are going to be the ones who are the most successful. Why would we expect the tournament to be any different?
No, I said this to Gabe yesterday. It's getting much harder to be middle class in America, and it is getting much harder to be middle class in.
Well, yeah, because I mean, St. Francis got to the tournament. They were in the tournament, like they had a chance to win the game against Alabama State. And the next thing they do is they say, we can't do this anymore. We're dropping to Division III. Yeah. I mean, not that I'm going to sit around. I didn't even know what St. Francis was before they made that. Like, I'm not going to cry for St. Francis, but like it ain't going to just be St. Francis that's making that choice. It ain't going to be just Francis that's saying, St. Francis that's saying we can't play the NIL game. Like we can't do that. Like we're going to lose everybody. We're not going to be able to field rosters. Nobody's going to come here. It's not even worth playing the game. So why would we even worry about scholarships and the rest of it? Let's just drop down to D3 and be what we are there, you know, and have no stakes attached to our athletic programs. You know, obviously that's not going to apply to Memphis, but I think people might be surprised to see how many universities end up making choices like that in the near future.
Real quick, what coaching hire do you particularly like?
I think Iowa did a great job with Ben McCollum. He did a great job at Drake this year. You know, and he's bringing the guys. He's bringing the guys from Drake to Iowa. So.